I'm Jamal, and you're listening to Gas in the Mecha, your weekly anime and manga analysis podcast. From inspiring arcs to game-changing cinematography, I'm on a journey to try and make sense of it all, episode by episode. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to Gas in the Mecha, and in today's episode, we are back once again talking about the anime I've spoken about way too many times already, Heiki Monogatari. I'm happy to be back here for the last time talking about Heiki Monogatari, for now anyway, at least this year. And yeah, as I've said time and time again, this show has just surpassed my expectations and I just really enjoy it. And so this week we are taking a look at something that's perhaps going to summarize a lot of what I've already said, but in through a new lens. And so don't see it as me repeating content, but more so taking a perspective in which is going to perhaps capture a lot of what this show has been discussing, and that is going to be through the lens of visual metaphors. Heiki Monogatari is a rich story which gives us such a great insight into the collapse of this clan, but what ties it all together? And that is where we get into visual metaphors, which are so integral to this anime and to these, I would say, perhaps oddly paced narratives. We need something that threads it all together, as we will discuss. And the visual metaphors in this show do exactly that, and that's why I think it's so well constructed. But before we do get into the nitty-gritty of this episode, we do have a bit of business to attend to, and that is through the form of a 5-star review, as we usually do on this podcast. When there is a review, I have pledged to read it out and thank said person, and that is what we are doing today. So this week's review, or not this week, I apologize, I'm getting to this a bit late, but the review for that I'm reading on this week's podcast comes from Ohira Fan, and they say, "Definitely the best anime-related podcast around on any platform. Topics vary between contemporary / currently airing anime and older / more obscure stuff, and they are always talked about in a way that indicates curiosity and passion to the field while being relatively well researched, in the sense that the host knows what they're talking about very clearly. So basically, if you are a person with an interest towards anime, not just from the consumer standpoint, but also from a place of genuine interest towards the art and the creators, this is for you." Thank you very much, Ohira Fan, for the review. Oh, and if I totally forgot to say the title. The title's actually really funny. It's Dude from Twitter. And as soon as I saw that in like the review website, I 100% knew what they meant. Yeah, it's been great interacting with you, and I'm really glad you enjoyed the podcast. Thank you so much for the review. But now let's jump into this week's episode. That is episode 108 of Guest in the Mecha. Why do visual metaphors matter so much in Heiki Monogatari? I always forget to do it in the intro, but I don't think it really needs to be said. There will be spoilers for Heiki Monogatari, of course, and that is for the whole series, because I'm finally doing an episode where the entire show is finished. Just like our last episode on Heiki Monogatari, in which we spoke about episode 9, storyboarded and directed by Rohei Takeshita, where we kind of just really broke down what makes that episode such a great one, I broke that episode into multiple parts. I think it was just much easier to digest a lot of the information that way, and I'm going to do that for this one as well. We're going to look at two things, or at least I've kind of divided into two things. We have flowers and butterflies, which kind of go into one section as a visual metaphor. And then we have what I will label the ultimate visual metaphor, and the main one I really want to discuss in this episode being the strings of the biwa. But let's just jump right into the first one, being the flowers. And I've spoken quite extensively about these in previous episodes, but I just to summarize all of that, they are basically representative of the mood and the sort of security / insecurity that the Heiki clan is going through. We spoke about how they're kind of, they, as we go through the series, as we often associate flowers with very positive things, And this show kind of right off the bat initially does kind of give them a bit of a darker connotation in how we have the plants in which fall and rise, well, mostly fall. The plant is sort of lives eventually to die. And we see that from the very beginning of the episode when we have flowers dropping onto the floor in this sort of imaginary plane. And then as we go through the series, we see that the plants and these really bright colors eventually have this very unnerving feeling connoting death and, again, insecurity of the Heiki. This time, though, I want to look at the flowers more so as a representation of people and the Heiki clan themselves, as opposed to being representative of the notion of death and life, which I think this lens, I think, is much more powerful and what really struck a chord with me as we went through the series. Of course, again, we can go back to the first episode, but also the last one as well. We have the privilege of doing that now. And we're presented with flowers in which are, in the first episode, you know, they're falling, but at the same time, we go to the last episode and they're rising again, kind of just like reversing said footage. That's pretty much what it is. And they kind of enter this cycle in which, of course, they fall, they come backwards, and then they close up again. And I kind of find that really exciting because it provides a really different perspective to an image in which I thought it was quite definitive. You know, a plant or a flower in this case, it grows, it dies, it falls to the ground, and that's it. That's the sad reality of things. But when we see them rising again in episode 11, I think that says a lot about how we perceive death and the real life that the Heiki potentially will live after death, in which, well, because most of them died or went to their own deaths. Death ultimately is not the end. It is simply another phase, and we repeat these cycles. That's simply what it means to, or I think that's what it means to be human from this perspective that Heiki Monogatari is putting out, one in which is quite inspired by Buddhist beliefs. But the flower as a visual metaphor overall is even more versatile than this. There are way too many examples. There's an example, maybe two, for every episode in these different uses of the flowers and how they're presented and what they mean, or just plants in general and the plant language. But one of my favorite ones would really be in the episode directed and storyboarded by quote-unquote Moko-chan. I'm not going to get into the semantics as to who they are, if they are real or not, but let's just say Moko-chan as they are credited. And it's when we have the tear that comes from the eye, and then what happens afterwards is that it sort of flows down and it breaks said flower and the petals separate from it. It pairs a very abstract metaphor, being the flower representative, of course, the Heiki and that, well, at least the Heiki members and that process of, you know, dying and living and then dying. And then a very bold and obvious visual metaphor being the eye, at least what the eye is pretty much like a very big part of Heiki and how, of course, we can see things and things we perhaps don't want to see. And in this case, it's seeing death. And by pairing the two together, it works really well because we kind of get this answer of seeing death. And I just found that one really cool. But it's even more versatile than this. And I think this is kind of proving the point now. Like when we go to the final episode as well, we get the time lapse of the flower representative of Tokiko, in which is going through all the different elements and it's constantly changing and growing. I love how that was animated because it's growing ever so slightly as it continues through. It's a pretty short sequence, but it's done really well. And of course, the background around it is constantly changing. And I love how that showcases her very prolonged hardship and almost lifetime of experience, as we've seen in this 11 episode anime. And she's been in almost every episode, and we've seen what she's gone through as a woman, as a mother, as a daughter, and all these experiences. And also just kind of as, I don't want to say prey, but perhaps as a victim or as the quote-unquote enemy as well to the Genji, constantly going through all these different forms of suffering, and that flower just summarized her entire arc in the space of about 5 or 10 seconds. What I'm really trying to say about Flowers and kind of just the approach of Naoko Yamada in general from the shows I've seen from her, or at least the works I've seen from her, is that she takes an idea, in this case Flowers, and will implant meaning in it, but she won't simply just go one way. She won't just take one step. It will be layered and layered and used in all these different ways. And it really, she will get the mileage she needs to out of these various ideas. And it's just masterful to see. That takes us very nicely to the sort of winged imagery we get, of course, of the butterflies. We also get the seagulls, but I think they kind of have a very similar message, so I'm not going to try and separate the two. But we've seen winged imagery quite a lot already from Yamada. Liz and the Bluebird is a testament to that, in how we, of course, have the Bluebird in which spreads their wings as their talent blooms and so on. I kind of tried to make this point with the Moko-chan example, and I'm not going to lie, butchered it a bit, but I think in the case of the butterflies and the winged imagery we get in this show, I find it cool how it's really the dynamic between the imagery, and this is where it gets even more versatile. I'm gonna say versatile a load of times because I need to emphasize that. It's how we have, of course, the flowers, which represent this cycle of life and death, or just a Heiki member who inevitably fall because that is so-called prophesized for them or fated for them, and the way they interact with the butterfly, in which, of course, butterflies go on to plants. That's how they feed, through nectar and so on. But I find it's not really the feeding part that's too interesting, but it's the dynamic between the two. It's how we have, of course, the winged imagery, the butterflies, in which are liberating. It's liberating ourselves from this very rigid concept of life and death being the end. And then we have, of course, the flower, which represents exactly that process. It's really fascinating how these opposites are paired together. And I think that also feeds into a lot of the dynamic binaries in this show, in how, if we sort of take our minds to the last episode, the notion that there is a capital down below in the water, and we have this whole notion of falling straight to hell, falling to our deaths. Falling is a big thing. Going downwards is a big thing. And then we have the butterflies, and you could also add in the seagulls, which are all about going upwards. They're all about traveling beyond the surface and liberating ourselves from the ground in which we live. The very inevitable and predictable pattern in which the flowers take is kind of contrasted by the butterfly. And it took a while for me to figure that out. And again, it's always just my personal interpretation of it. But I think it makes a lot of sense. And it really feeds into the binaries in which this show has to talk about between life and death, Genji and Heiki, and all these other things. And that takes us very nicely to talk about the ultimate visual metaphor in the show being the strings of the biwa. The strings of the biwa and biwa as a whole, both the instrument, its sort of metaphorical addition of her, and the physical her, it's very layered, but I think it will manage to come full circle by the very end. And that's why I've been really calling it the ultimate visual metaphor. I know it sounds very clickbaity, but it's true, in my view at least. And it's because it really captures almost everything this show is about. And it's almost this umbrella metaphor for almost all the other layers and other metaphors. I think the last episode manages to give us a lot of context for this, and really where we should start. And it's how it kind of portrays the strings as these multiple timelines which are intertwined. That is what we are all connected by. It all leads to the same destination. Death, as that's how the human timeline is. It begins with birth and life. Life continues, and it eventually comes to an end, just like the pattern in which the flowers take. This anime explores a lot of things, and I think that was one of the things that also maybe took some people out of it as well, from class differences briefly to oppression to gender and so forth, I don't say too many things, but a lot of things, and it's a lifetime worth of things. It's an entire society's lifetime, almost, this anime takes place in. And I think in the end, it kind of, well, I think generally all these things boil down to that very timeline. In the end, we all die, and that's the unfortunate pattern in which human life takes place in, and that's really what keeps this all connected. These strings, which we can interpret as lines in the last episode, really go to show that we are connected by this one idea, which is mortality, no matter how you view it. I don't want to make it seem that like the last episode is the only one which gives context to this and really builds up the idea of this visual metaphor, because in fact it's kind of been there from the very start, and it's kind of integrated itself into so many different corners of the show in my view. And one of them is the ending, in which we have of course the black and white divide, and we kind of have the strings in the middle. But you can also interpret this as, you know, the back of the sort of, I really don't know what to call the other biwa. I'm going to say white biwa. We can interpret the white biwa's hair strings as the strings of the biwa, and that could be interpreted as the back of her hair. But then again, she literally is the biwa, and hence that all adds into this larger metaphor of the strings again, because that is the divide, and she is this middle point within the show. Just to go back to the ending, we have these binary opposites, which are again divided by the strings. We have the white side and we have the black side, and they're constantly interchanging in the ending. It's a very nice thing, and it's of course directed and storyboarded by Yamada, and I also do believe it is solo key animated by Takashi Kojima. But this ending got me thinking of two things. It got me thinking about how it's representative of course Biwa herself, but also the binaries in the show and Biwa's position within it. She is in the middle of the show. She is in the middle of, kind of, you can argue, life and death, in the way she is sort of ageless. She kind of has very little agency in how she can't really change a lot of what happens in the show. She simply watches and tells the story. She has to embrace the process. We'll get into that. But at the same time, she is alive, of course. And so she's kind of in this middle neutral state, you can argue. That's sort of the conclusion I've come to when it comes to Biwa's place in this narrative, besides being a storyteller. But even the storyteller position is quite neutral. She is there to observe the events and recall the events as they happened. As you've probably realized in this podcast episode, I'm gonna keep pushing this metaphor even further. And let's do that. So we can even look at this in terms of Biwa's eyes and that dynamic and an opposition between her eyes. Of course, the colors, and that also translates into distortion as well. But the main thing I really want to talk about is that dynamic between, and I guess a dynamic a lot because this shows a lot about dynamics and dynamics between people and ideas and imagery, but it's this dynamic between past and future, her being able to see the future as well as seeing the dead and the remnants of her past, says a lot about what all this has to say and these strings and how they're this dividing factor, and how she as a character is a dividing factor because she's split in the middle of so many things. She's split between time, she's split between space, almost in how she doesn't really have much of a role in the place in which she's in. So that middleness that Biwa has is really contextualized in the visual layers, and of course we can return that back to the strings, in which that is the middle point of almost all things as she is. We can extend this dynamic between her eyes to, of course, the hot and cold colors this show explores. Heike and Genji, nobility and peasantry, young and old, within the Heike itself, and too many more things. This thing can go on forever, but that is really my big point. It's the fact that the strings encapsulates everything this show is about. Where this gets extremely deep though, and it's something that we kind of teased out when we were talking about A Silent Voice and how the imagery is based around water, But and this is something I think this is what I this is the genius of Yamada. I think this is where it really lies. It's how that these ideas and metaphors inspire the cinematography of the show and how it's visually composed on the very basic level. So when we look at the very binary approach of Yamada's cinematography, just like the binaries of the show in how she uses, of course, I've said it so many times, the far left and far right of the screen, and even the corners too, as we get to some of the other episodes, at least the last one. What I think makes Naoki Yamada a genius of a filmmaker to a lot of people, and I would say to me as well in quite a few regards, is the fact that she's able to incorporate all these ideas and the visual ideas into her cinematography, and hence no shot really feels meaningless because it all is a part of what this show is talking about and discussing. In this case, how she uses the far left and right of the screen, often keeping our eyes very, they're very glued to the different sections as she like waves us around through the episode. But that is all part of what this show is about. And when we return this back to the strings in which lie in the middle person being Biwa, the Biwa strings and so on, that is all summarized by that. Everything at that point kind of made sense to me as to why this show was shot the way it is, because everything kind of comes back to that middle idea of our intertwined reality, that we are all mortals and we will all fall one day. Falling doesn't mean it's the end, but it is the thing that we will all have to accept, and that is what brings everything together in this show. Just to throw in another one of those side points, I would say that Heiki Monogatari as a visual piece reminds me a lot of, if I'm going to take it out of the context of Naoki Yamada, but put it in the context of Kyoto Animation, it really reminds me of the work of Taki Yamamura and specifically Surune. This was an anime which I wasn't too into until about the very end, and it kind of all clicked. And Heiki Monogatari I was kind of in from the beginning, but that's besides the point. It's really how a lot of the imagery and cinematography, as I said before, is crafted around symmetry and breaking symmetry and what that has to say. It's all about how you frame things to incite the idea of balance and imbalance, and Heiki Monogatari kind of does have this notion of balance. It's always these countervailing forces opposing each other time and time again, only to realize that they all kind of come to the same fate. Obviously, take that with a pinch of salt. I'm not saying that Heiki Monogatari is inspired by Surune by any means whatsoever, but what I am saying is that I think Heiki Monogatari takes this idea, even if it wasn't actually from Surune, but it takes that concept an extra step further, in my view. So to wrap up this very dense section of the podcast, I really just think that the strings of the Biwa and Biwa as a character says a lot of things and basically ties this entire show together, no pun intended because strings, but it's the fragile string that all leads us to the same destination, and it is it's one which kind of only really makes true sense by the end as to what this all means. And I think a lot of the imagery from a visual perspective all is can be condensed and reduced back to the strings, and that's what makes it such a powerful metaphor at the end. We're getting towards the end of the podcast, but instead of maybe talking about takeaways, I want to kind of end on a bit of a meta point in regards to Heiki Monogatari, and more so a meta point in regards to visual metaphors and why these extended visual metaphors are really important and why they're so important to Heiki Monogatari in particular. To me, it really comes down to identity. How does a show gain some sort of visual identity and make itself different to any other show? And this is through various means. I'm not here to claim, and it would be an incredibly hard hill to try and defend that one show is built on the back of its visual metaphors alone, and that's what makes it unique. No, it's so many other things. It's, at least visually, through direction, of course, the character designs, the art style, the creatives on it, the inspirations. I can name a whole host of things. But in the end, I think what an anime or just a piece of media or visual media really needs is something to tie itself down. And also, what I think what I'm really trying to feed out here is what ties the show together, what ties episode 1 to episode 11, what ties episode 1 to episode 7, what ties episode 7 to episode 9, for example. And for that, I would say we need something, and that's where visual metaphors come in as a really useful tool for that. And that's what Heikimon Gatari really takes advantage of. I think when we don't have something that really ties the show down, or something that's strong that ties the show down, I think this is when we get into the very vague category of an anime, or at least categorization of a show, being soulless, where it doesn't really have many weighty factors that make the show the show. And I've said this for a few shows, which I'm not going to name now because I want to keep the spotlight on Heikimon Gatari. But I think, at least with overproduction and the very saturated nature of the anime industry right now, and how many anime are coming out, we have reached a point in which we do have a lot of, well, I think that it's kind of always existed, but I think now it's a lot more evident that we have quite a few quote-unquote soulless shows, which don't really have something to really anchor it down and make it. To be honest, one of the main critiques of this anime was in terms of pacing, and I totally understand this critique, and I'm not even going to lie and say that I didn't get the weird whiplash in like episode 3 and 4 when I realized everyone was growing up, and I was like, what's going on here? And you know, there are some episodes where a lot of things happen, that's true, but I think what really ties this show down are the visual metaphors. It's what builds this history up to be these connected ideas. It's what makes it a series rather than just a bunch of loose ideas that don't really have much connection with each other. The flowers, the butterflies, the seagulls, the strings are what build this show and make it a single piece rather than a series of just random pieces put together and all stuck together. Why is this super important for Heikimon Gatari and historical anime in particular? I think it's because history and historical anime, if we exclude writing, really has the potential to come across as a timeline of events, and as a result it lacks purpose. That sounds perhaps a bit like, what? Of course we want to know what like happened. Of course it's a timeline, but it isn't really a timeline. At least that's not what I think the purpose of history really is, or a historical piece, just to showcase an objective line of events which happened and then just end it there. In my view, I think we look at history for the purpose of learning and interpreting, for the purpose of extracting ideas and themes that underpinned said time, and feeding out those ideas that constructed the past and what we know the past to be. I think history and historical pieces of media, especially visual ones, when they become that timeline, they become pointless because they don't really have an aim. They don't have something to prove. And Heikimon Gatari gives us these visual metaphors to try and give us a message about mortality and give us insight into mortality as well as all these other ideas. Mortality is simply one of them, but it's the fact that it has something to say about this piece of history or this time in history, not just presenting it like it's any other time in history. These visual metaphors give this show, but also Biwa's story, which this whole anime literally is. This whole anime is the story that Biwa is telling to us about the Heiki. It gives her story and ultimately her character, which is like super meta, purpose, meaning, and identity. The whole point of the Heike story is to learn from it, to take the idea that we have to accept the process of death and accept our mortal nature. I completely forgot, now I'm realizing it, that I forgot to talk about the prayer hands. And I really love how that by no means I'm not calling prayer a metaphor, but it's the idea that if we think of it again as these two sides coming together, that kind of again feeds into, of course, the Amida cinematography of the left and the right sort of coming together, the coming together part are the strings. And I think prayer ultimately in the show that it constantly talks about is it all alludes to the idea that we have to accept in the process. And that is what we learn from the Heike story, as this show is called. We just have to accept and learn and develop as people, regardless of this, whether this idea is looming above our heads or not. And hence, I go back to the big point which I was trying to make before. It's the fact that these visual metaphors give this show purpose and gives that idea of trusting in the process purpose, because that's exactly what we're supposed to extract from it. That's what we're supposed to take from this show. And so those lessons are ones in which we can learn thanks to the visual metaphors in the show. And with that being said, that is another Guest in the Mecca podcast for this week. I hope you did enjoy this episode, though I had a lot to say, as you could probably tell. I always say before I'm going to do the podcast that I'm going to keep this one short. I'm just going to, you know, do the podcast. I'm going to try and make it 15 minutes, just say a few points, and that's the show. But it's probably going to be longer than that. But I hope you did take something from it, and I hope it was at least somewhat insightful. When it comes to the show, at least my opinion on the show, I'm sure you know that I really like it. I love it. This is an amazing show. And I think hopefully this does justice to like my opinions and like ideas of what this anime has to say. So that's really it. If you, of course, want to support this podcast, you know the things you can do. You can, of course, like the podcast, subscribe to the podcast on YouTube. Those things are on YouTube. Comment on the channel below the videos, that really helps. And this video, in the comments, tell me what you think of not just the video, but also what do you think about the visual metaphors in the show. Do you agree with me? Do you think that the flowers have something to say about life and death? Do you think the strings have things to say about life, death, and mortality? Any of those things, just tell me what you think about these visual metaphors in the comments below. And then, as we also discussed at the beginning of the episode, if you do want to support the podcast from the audio point of view, what can you do? You can leave a 5-star review like Ohira Fan did at the beginning. And yeah, all your support is appreciated. So thank you for listening to this final Heike Monogatari podcast for this year. I have the end of year reviews coming up for the regular listeners. I'm sure audio listeners will probably be more aware of this than the video listeners, but this is the time of year in which we do, of course, the unskippable opening show. We do the What I Learned About Anime This Year show, the like year in production show. So good things are coming. Good things are coming on this podcast, and look out for those. So thank you for listening. I have been your host, Jamal, today, and have a great day, and I'll see you next time on Get in the Mecca. The music in this production goes as follows. Synthwave by Alex McCulloch.